Professor in Astrophysics from the University of Southern Queensland. Jaunty, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks. Pleasure to get you back on the program. Now, looking at this situation, how exactly did China lose control of this satellite we're discussing?
It's not entirely clear. Now, China kind of stated publicly that they had ended their telemetry link with the spacecraft. So kind of the inference with the way they announced it was that we intended to do this, it's all good. Now, I'm not entirely sold on that. The story is that this thing was launched back in 2011. It was China's first space station. It's a step on the road to them becoming a real presence in space. And it was launched with a two-year mission. That mission was then extended for another 2.5 years. And in March 2016, they announced that it was the end of the road. The job had been done. We need to move on to other things. And as part of that, they said, we've lost the telemetry with it. And the way it was couched was, this is intentional, this is deliberate. And I don't think anybody really believes that. I think that part of it is still heavily debated. It should be said that even in January this year, engineers at China's aerospace agency were still trying to reassure everybody that, no, this was all under control. The re-entry will happen at some point in April, but we know where it'll happen. It'll be in the ocean. And I think that, again, nobody really believes. If you look at everybody else, European Space Agency, NASA, they're treating this object as essentially uncontrolled, gradually spiraling down towards fiery doom.
I know it's a big sky out there, but, you know, keeping track of these kind of things, it's got to be somebody's job. Why have we been unable to identify an exact date and location for re-entry?
That's because it's really difficult. So we know where this thing is now. We're tracking it like a lot of other space junk up there. There's tens of thousands of bits of debris that are tracked all the time, all day, every day. And this is essentially in free fall orbiting the Earth. The reason it's spinning inwards is that as it's moving around the Earth, it's passing through the tenuous outlayers of the atmosphere. The atmosphere just doesn't suddenly stop, but it rather fades away into nothingness over thousands of kilometers above the Earth's surface, gradually getting more and more tenuous. So a lot of this space debris is immersed in a very thin gas, and so it feels drag. It feels the wind blowing against it. And the atmosphere is so thin that that's a very weak effect. Otherwise, everything would fall down straight away. The problem is, exactly how thick the atmosphere is at a given time changes with time at that altitude. And that's not something we can predict. So we can't predict the strength of the headwind that this thing's going to be going through over the next few weeks, which means it may fall a little earlier, it may fall a little later, depending on the conditions that are to come.
I mean, the comparison that jumps to my mind when you describe it like that, Jaunty, is, thinking of a speeding car on a perfectly flat, perfectly paved asphalt road and knowing, well, it's going to stay in a straight line, but then once it gets onto a little bit of gravel, a little bit of potholes perhaps, this is where the course starts to become a little bit unpredictable.
Absolutely. It's the same kind of thing. I mean, the other way you could envision it is putting, you know, doing the whole Mythbusters type thing of get your car on your perfectly flat, perfectly straight road, put a brick on the accelerator so there's nobody in to steer, and then letting it go. Can we predict where it will end up? Well, it depends on the wind, and as we all know, day to day, the wind is gusty and could gradually blow it off course. So at some point, it will probably leave the road and come to a violent stop somewhere, but you don't know whether that will be in 10 kilometers time or 50 kilometers time. It's the same kind of deal.
Now, you mentioned those kind of reassurances from the Chinese space program saying it'll be fine, it'll land somewhere in the ocean, but they've actually said it's going to re-enter somewhere between the 43 north and 43 south latitudes. Now, as a total layperson, when it comes to latitudes, that almost sounds reassuring to me until I read that that actually makes up some good two-thirds of the planet Earth. So certainly, there's still plenty of stuff there in that two-thirds of the planet where the space station could potentially land, potentially hit.
There definitely is. And I mean, on the Earth as a whole, it's 70% water, it's 70% ocean. So it's a fair bet that if you're a gambling person, you'd say, well, it'll land in the ocean. And I suspect that's what the people in China are crossing their fingers, because if it lands in the ocean, they can say, well, we always intended it that way. Look, that's what we said a few months ago. The reality is, we know that it won't hit closer to the pole than 40 degrees north or 40 degrees south. And that's because the orbit that the space station is on around the Earth is tilted to the Earth's equator, but it's not tilted so much it ever goes up near the poles. So what it does is it sweeps out this torus, this band around the Earth over time, that goes up as far as 43 north, 43 south, and that's the limit. The exact path it follows within that wobbles and varies with time as a result of the wind, as a result of, you know, perturbations from the moon, all the rest of it. All of that ties in to gradually change that path over time, but those are the hard limits.
Worst case scenario, it does come down on land. Just how much damage could this particular satellite do?
You'd have to be very unlucky for it to cause anything other than a really spectacular firework display. And part of the reason for that is that people are small, you know, on the scale of the planet, we're fairly tiny. And the habit of humans is to congregate together. You know, I live in Toowoomba. We've roughly 120,000, 130,000 people here in an area that you can cross in 20 minutes in the car. Brisbane's down the road with over a million people. But again, they're all clustered really closely together. So even though we think about the Earth being really heavily populated, and in many ways it is, it's still mainly empty space. So the odds are if this thing comes down, it will land in empty space, and the odds of it hitting anybody, whether it's a human or whether it's some of the things that we have built, are pretty much vanishingly small just because there's so much empty space out there for it to come down in.
And just as a final point, Jonty, there are some 19,000 artificial satellites currently floating out, around up there, and this kind of space station coming down, it's actually not an isolated case. Satellites do occasionally fall out of orbit and, well, crash land back on the planets, you know, where they probably belong. How concerned should we be about this issue going forward when we talk about humankind continuing to launch out these satellites, continuing to leave this kind of space junk floating around out in the atmosphere?
It's a really good point. Now, the concern I have is not that people on the ground are imperiled by this debris. The reason that Tiangong is making such big news is, A, it's bigger than most things. It's a space station. It's designed for people to be in. And it's also out of control. And most of the things that we burn up in the Earth's atmosphere, people control, and they actually make them land in the oceans definitively so that even if there was debris, you're minimizing the chance of it making it all the way to the ground and hitting a building. And in fact, the area of Australia that I'm in, the East Coast, is one of the places where a lot of these things actually are deliberately burnt up so that they can land in the Pacific Ocean out to the east of Australia. It does happen that things land on land and even near cities occasionally. The big news story for that in Australia was, of course, Skylab back in 1979, which came down in Western Australia near Esperance. And in fact, I believe the council in Esperance fined NASA $400 for littering. I find that they've still got to collect. You know, that's the level of concern we should have at the ground. Where people are genuinely worried is that we're putting more and more stuff up in space. And that means there's more and more chance of things up there colliding with other things up there and making more debris. And getting this whole collisional cascade. The story that was played out really famously in the US film Gravity, which played a little bit with the science, you know, but it did a very good job of saying, well, we don't need to change the science for the story, we'll keep the science correct. And that idea that you could get a collisional cascade and things fragmenting, causing more fragments, and making a certain space of the area around Earth potentially unusable, is something people are concerned with. And that's actually why, when satellites are retired, they're often retired to a fiery doom and burnt up in the atmosphere. If you control them and take them away, there's no risk of them doing something when they're not controlled, crashing, smashing, falling apart. So this is part of our efforts to keep space tidy. Just in the case of this space station, it's not been done deliberately. It's just happening because eventually all things fall back to Earth.
Jonty, thank you very much. Absolute pleasure getting you on, and just a fascinating chat this morning.
It's a pleasure. Great to catch up with you again.